There's so much to look forward to in 2026 on the ABC.
Yes. Phenomenal.
Just you wait.
With new drama, Goolagong.
She's a natural.
Brand new dog park.
It's a shame we can't be more like them, isn't it?
I'm happy with a handshake.
A new take on a 90s classic.
Welcome to Race Around the World.
And new seasons of old favourites, like Austin, The Piano.
Give me more of that.
Grand Designs Transformations and Muster Dogs.
This brings things into focus, doesn't it?
This is fabulous.
So much to look forward to.
That's 2026.
It's a spectacular time.
On ABC TV and ABC iView.
From Wurundjeri country, I'm Lexi Junowick, and on today's New Year's Eve edition of The Breakfast Wrap, Muslim Australians report a surge in Islamophobic abuse and assaults in wake of the Bondi terror attack. You'll hear from the special advisor to the Australian National Imams Council.
Let's be clear, ISIS is not Islam, is not Muslims.
Then, record-breaking rain in North Queensland cuts off communities. We speak with the mayor of one of the worst affected regions.
Initially, we thought it mightn't have been as bad, but there are parts that are equal, if not worse, to 2019 with stock losses.
From the Radio National Breakfast team, this is The Breakfast Wrap. Hateful graffiti at an Islamic college in Melbourne. Dismembered pigs thrown onto graves in a Muslim cemetery in regional New South Wales. Muslim women spat on, abused and threatened in Perth. They're just some of the incidents reported in wake of the Bondi Beach terror attack. For more on this, host Barbara Miller spoke with Bilal Rauf, a barrister and special advisor to the council.
Can you definitely pinpoint a spike following the Bondi terrorist attack?
Yes. Look, sadly, it's been an ongoing experience, but certainly following the horrific murders in Bondi, there has been quite an 200% increase in the number of reports that are coming through to the Imam Councils, and in some places with some organisations even more. And, you know, to the extent that these are coming in and being formally noted or recorded. So there certainly has been a very obvious and clear spike in the number of incidents.
There's obviously a lot of focus now on how to keep the Jewish community safe. Do you think there's enough focus on how to keep possible victims of Islamophobia safe?
Look, the important thing is that every Australian deserves to be safe and feel safe and be able to go about, you know, whatever their life and activities. And sadly, the Australian Muslim experience has had an experience over, you know, many, many years of not receiving the same level or that protection. And that, for instance, even leading up to the horrific incident in Christchurch and soon after that, there was similarly then a spike. And, you know, I can assure you that there wasn't any call for any Royal Commission or anything like that. So there was a very different level of attention.
Would you like to see a call, a Royal Commission into Islamophobia in Australia?
Well, I think it's one of those things that there are some very obvious institutional steps that can be taken and support that can be given. And because a lot of it also stems from divisive rhetoric, which sadly plays out in parts of the media and indeed among some politicians. We've seen, you know, the examples of Pauline Hanson and the fact of her even being applauded in Bondi. And, you know, these are people that, in my view, engage in divisive rhetoric. And rather than bring us together, particularly at a time like the present, when we are going through a crisis, what becomes important is that we stand together and our leaders bring us together and keep us together. But instead, the divisive rhetoric has the opposite effect, that is, to divide us and to scatter us as a society and as a country. I do understand that there was a connection with ISIS, including the place where these individuals travel to. Now, if that's so, let's be clear, ISIS is not Islam, is not Muslims.
Is it radical Islam?
What's that? Let me ask you that. What's radical Islam? And that's the misnomer. That, to me, is the problematic phrase. What's radical Islam?
How would you describe, then, what ISIS is?
ISIS is a terrorist organisation. It is a terrorist organisation which is hijacked, whether it be religious ideas or titles for the sake of legitimacy, but it doesn't make it Islamic at all. And that's something that's, you know, repeated all over the world. But, you know, just because it's appropriated a name doesn't make it so. And especially when you look at the facts of the situation, that it regards many Muslims as non-Muslim and has killed hundreds of thousands of Muslims across the world. And in fact, there are people who are associated with the Imams Council who are on the death list of ISIS. That is, that ISIS want them killed. But these are people in Australia who are associated with the Imams Council. Why? Because they have clearly denounced ISIS as an organisation. So let's call them ISIS. Let's call them a terrorist organisation. But let's also be clear, they do not have any association with Islam, the religion, or Muslims, the adherents. And so, you know, in the same way that...
But it's in the name, isn't it? ISIS is the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant.
Sure, but you know, in similar vein, if we take someone like, you know, the person who perpetrated the Christchurch murder with his right-wing ideologies and misappropriation of Christian ideas, we don't attribute that to Christian or Christianity, and nor should we. And in the same way here, it's a terrorist ideology and organisation, and we need to call it out for that.
One location, just to return to that theme, that mm-hmm. was named was the centre where Wissam Haddad was preaching. Do you support the fact that it was shut down?
Absolutely. Hate, wherever it appears, in whatever guise it appears in, needs to be confronted. And I should note that people within the community have been raising concerns about it for some time. It has now been shut down, and I think that's the appropriate step, absolutely.
Bilal Rauf, a barrister and special advisor to the Australian National Imams Council. Flooding in North Queensland has turned deadly after authorities confirmed a man aged in his 70s was found in floodwaters in Normanton in the state's remote northwest. Flooded rivers, creeks and road closures have left some outback communities cut off and isolated from the rest of the state. Parts of the northwest have recorded close to their annual average rainfall in just a few days. State and federal disaster funding has been activated for five councils, including the Shire of McKinlay, which is one of the worst hit regions. Its mayor, Janine Fagan, spoke with Barbara.
Today's probably the first day that we're seeing a bit of lightning in the rain. Like, it's still wet, it's still overcast, but the system has moved further south. But because our shire is so big, we have 42,000 square kilometres, so the shire is not out of the woods yet, and our smaller towns like Kynuna and McKinlay are still experiencing a bit of rain down there at the moment.
What's been the impact on the people there?
I guess for our town, like, we don't flood, so that's a positive, you know, so there's not a huge impact on people, but the stock is our biggest issue with our graziers, and 2019 was only 6 years ago and people are just starting to, you know, get themselves back on their feet and pick up, and, you know, we had a good season last season. But just now looking, initially we thought it mightn't have been as bad, but there are parts that are equal, if not worse, to 2019 with stock losses. So that's very unfortunate, and early days still, because, you know, people are just starting to get around in choppers to have a look. And, but they are starting to feed, get some of their own hay out, you know, rather than getting fodder from the state, they're actually just using up their own stock to just get animals fed and get them to high ground.
And the disaster relief is no doubt welcome. What do you think people there need most?
Well, at the moment, I guess we need time and we need the sunshine to come out and try and, you know, get things dried up. But, yes, I think support, I think it'll be in the next coming weeks, you know, when there's that clean-up time on the properties and in town, support locally, you know, buying goods, because obviously our towns, when they get isolated, you know, people take a little while to come back and they get that worry that, oh, no, we can't get to Dooley Creek because it's flooded, or, you know, once we can get roads opened up, you know, moving in later on in the year into our tourist season, you know, not to forget about us, and we're always open for business once we can be.
Do you feel that people were prepared for this?
Yes, I think as much as we could be, but, you know, the weather, you know, you can get the expected rainfalls, and at the end of the day, if you've only got so much high country, you can only do your best that way. I know earlier on in the week when it all started, a lot of people were getting choppers into open gates so that, you know, cattle could move between paddocks as needed. But at the end of the day, if the rain falls in a certain area and your catchments get full, you know, there's no escaping it. And I know a lot of people said that their stock was stronger because we had a good season. But I spoke to one grazier who's actually one of our councillors, and he said, yeah, well, they were strong, but they had to swim about 30K. So, you know, that's a long way for, you know, for cattle, even no matter how strong they are, to get themselves out of trouble.
Tell me also, I understand people, though, did really band together also in terms of the medical care you had there. Tell us about that.
Oh, yeah, well, we have, you know, we were struggling for doctors for many years, and in the last, you know, 3 years, we've actually secured, we had one for 2 years, and we now have got a lovely new doctor, and she was due to go away, but obviously can't, but, you know, she's on leave, but she's still happy to be on call. We had the staff, obviously, when the roads were closing and there was staff leaving, and then we couldn't get new staff in. Some of the staff were having to do double shifts and all the rest of it, but we had one nurse who was on her way out here driving, and she got to Richmond, and then the Swift crew, with the boats, they've come and stationed here. There was the fire department. I just got onto them and they said, oh, we can help her across, because they were coming over. So that was a really good story, and the hospital were very pleased to see they had that other staff member on the right side of the river.
Well, and what's your priority today?
Yeah, we've got a few meetings on this morning. Just keeping in contact with our graziers, making sure they're okay. But they do what they do. You know, it's like here, if you need a plumber, you call your plumber. You know, if you need an electrician, whereas they call their chopper pilots and say, right, we've got work to do. Let's go and see what we need to do. So just support them. I have heard that the Premier is going to be in Cloncurry today. I don't think he's coming over to Dooley Creek, but I will be in contact with the Cloncurry mayor just to let him know. And I'm sure he is aware of the situation, because we all talk all the time, and the boundaries, you know, boundaries are boundary, but, you know, all the river systems sort of working together. So I'm sure he's very aware of what's happening in our shire as well.
And if you happen to be listening to this podcast from one of the affected areas in North Queensland, it's very important that you tune into your local ABC station for the latest emergency warnings. Gambling giant Sportsbet pressured the Australian Communications and Media Authority into watering down an enforcement announcement. That's according to new documents released to the ABC. In 2022, the watchdog fined Sportsbet a record $2.5 million after it found the company continued to text and email tens of thousands of customers, even though they had tried to unsubscribe from marketing messages. In wake of all of this, Barbara caught up with Andrew Wilkie, the independent MP for Clark in Tasmania and a vocal anti-gambling advocate.
Andrew Wilkie, what do you make of this revelation that the sports bet had influence over ACMA's press release?
I suppose, first of all, with the severity of what was done, they were only small and some would say subtle changes to the draft media release by ACMA, but they had the effect of significantly downplaying the harm caused by Sportsbet's misconduct. So it was an egregious act by Sportsbet to say that over 150,000 spam texts to over 37,000 customers, all of whom who had asked to be removed from the list of sending out marketing material. Remember that these are people that many of them would have been trying to escape addiction or other harms. You know, these are some of the most vulnerable people in the country and some of the most vulnerable sports bet customers. So the first point I want to make is this is a very serious matter. But the second point I'd make is that for sports bettors to think they even have that that authority or that influence over the Australian Communications and Media Authority is quite remarkable. But it just goes to show that these online gambling companies, they are a law unto themselves. And nowhere is that more obvious in the fact that the online gambling companies have said, no, they don't want a gambling advertising ban. And the Prime Minister said, yes, sir. So they think they're a law unto themselves, and they are looking like a law unto themselves. The third point I'd make is that what on earth was ACMA thinking that they even needed to send a draft media release to one of the big companies that they are overseeing and regulating? Now, you know, I've sent draft media releases to companies and said, is this factually correct? You know, have I got the number right? Getting a fact check is one thing. But to be open to a requested or demanded change that substantially alters the effect of the media release, that is quite remarkable. And I would like to see the federal government early in the new year look at this and to ensure that, or to assure themselves that ACMA is up to the job.
ACMA has said that the release was not diminished in any way and that it only shared it to ensure fairness and accuracy. You reject that?
I reject it absolutely. Yes, there were only a small number of changes made, but they were critical changes. And critically, they had the effect of reducing the severity of the impact of sports bets misbehaviour. To basically remove that suggestion or that point that these are very, very vulnerable people that were being very deliberately targeted. And I say deliberately targeted because you've only got to look at the history of the behaviour of the online gambling companies. They have a well-documented history now of acting in a predatory way and targeting people who are trying to escape addiction. There doesn't seem to be a week goes by that we don't see another story in the media where someone has excluded themselves, that the gambling company knows that that person obviously is gambling more money than their income allows for, and then them getting cold called weeks later, being offered bonus bets, being offered complimentary tickets to the footy. You know, these are predatory companies, and that's why we need a really tough cop on the beat. But at the moment, I'm sorry, but I think the Australian Communications and Media Authority is acting more like a lap dog than a guard dog when, you know, we need guard dogs on that fence to protect the most vulnerable Australians.
What exactly would you like the federal government to do?
Well, to have a look at this and to satisfy itself that ACMA is up to the job and to direct any changes that might be necessary. Now, I can't talk in detail to that point because obviously someone needs to take a deep dive into ACMA and to look at, you know, exactly why ACMA thought it was okay to send a draft media release to Sportsbet, not to be fact-checked, but basically to receive qualitative feedback and then thought it was okay to agree to those requested changes. I think, you know, from where I sit, it looks like too cozy a relationship between the regulator and those companies that it's meant to regulate. And I think it needs to pull back and just remember what its role here now more than ever, because there is such a heightened awareness in the community right now of the misconduct of the online gambling companies. And full mark to the ABC, they've done some great work in this space, including a Four Corners episode a couple of months ago now that looked at the ineffectiveness of regulation and oversight, the fact that the Northern Territory Racing and Wagering Commission has become the de facto national regulator and is pretty useless and conflicted. You know, maybe we need more than ACMA. Maybe we need a national gambling regulator.
Andrew Wilkie, Independent MP for Clark in Tasmania. I'm going to take you now to the story of a Christmas cruise gone very wrong. Disgruntled passengers on board the Coral Adventurer have been transported back to land after the vessel ran aground on a coral reef off PNG at the weekend. And if that name sounds familiar, it's the same liner that made headlines in October after an 80-year-old was left behind on an excursion to Queensland's Lizard Island. When the mistake was discovered and search crews returned, the woman, who had been feeling unwell, was found dead. That death and the grounding of the Coral Adventurer are now under investigation, and the incidents are raising renewed questions about crew safety, oversight and accountability. Dr. Tim Stevens is a professor of international law at the University of Sydney Law School. Barbara spoke with him.
How surprising or unusual are each of these incidents?
Well, they're quite unusual. The cruise ship industry generally operates, you know, mostly trouble-free. But when difficulties arise, the real challenge for customers, for consumers, for passengers, is that they can be entering a pretty murky legal world. Now, in the case of this particular company and this particular cruise ship, it's actually much more straightforward than most cases involving cruise ships, because in this case, this ship is an Australian registered vessel. It's owned and run by an Australian company that's operated out of Australia. So all the jurisdiction is fairly straightforward. Passengers can turn to the courts of Queensland to resolve any disputes that may arise. So It hopefully can be resolved in a fairly easy way. But that's not the case if you buy a ticket on board a cruise ship that might be registered in Liberia, where the company might be, you know, owned and operated out of the United States. And so when you step on board, your rights are not as clear as they might otherwise be.
I believe this was the Coral Adventurer's first trip out again after that terrible incident where the woman was left behind. How reassured should people who have booked, forward booked with that liner be?
Ultimately, that's a question for the operator. But interestingly, again, because this is an Australian flagged vessel, an Australian registered vessel, it means that the Australian Maritime Safety Authority has jurisdiction over it, and also the Australian Transport Safety Board as well, or Bureau. So they're able to investigate what has happened, and the ATSB has already commenced an investigation. AMSA, the Australian Maritime Safety Authority, has detained this vessel. So authorities are able to act very quickly where the vessel is an Australian registered one. And I guess if you are a consumer, if you're a passenger, you should take some reassurance from that. And you may wish to prefer Australian carriers over international ones, because you know at least Australian authorities can do something about the situation if things go wrong. It's still the case, however, if you look at the fine print, that these companies do seek to minimise the extent of their liability as far as possible. So this particular operator, for instance, says you must have travel insurance, and they will otherwise not cover or be on the hook for liability. So again, buyer beware. Very important, before you step on a cruise ship, know exactly what your rights are and have as much travel insurance as you can possibly afford to cover for things when they go wrong.
How well regulated is it as an industry?
So the regulation really relies on the state of the vessel, where the vessel is registered. So again, Australia can regulate Australian registered vessels, Australian flagged vessels, but it can't really regulate the cruise ship industry as a whole, because most vessels, the vast majority, are registered in other states. So yeah, we rely on those states, we call them flag states, to do the right thing to regulate the industry. But what happens in practice is that cruise ship companies will seek to register their vessels in jurisdictions that may not be as robust and as interested in careful oversight of the industry as, say, Australia is. And that means that it does become a murky legal world. You can fall between the gaps, and you may not be able to get the compensation you deserve if something goes wrong.
Dr. Tim Stevens, Professor of International Law at the University of Sydney Law School. Well, that's about all we've got time for on The Breakfast Wrap today. Every interview was presented by Barbara Miller and produced by the Radio National Breakfast team. The Breakfast Wrap was produced by Josie Scott. I'm Lexi Junowick. Thank you so much for listening this New Year's Eve, and I'll be back with The Wrap the same time tomorrow in 2026.